It's interesting, you know, hearing people's views in and around Sheffield about life and about death. I don't know if any of you have been on the internet and had a look at the death clock. All right, you just type it in there on Google, death clock. Interesting, at Central of Four, there are a couple of people who'd heard about the death clock. Let me just read you what it says. It's the internet's friendly reminder that life is slipping away, second by second. Like the hourglass of the net, the death clock will remind you just how short life is. So you put in your date of birth, you put in your sex, and you put in your body, BMI, body mass index, and it gives you a little bit of a description on how to calculate that in the little subtext down below. So you put in those three things, you hit input, and then it'll come out down the bottom and tell you how much longer you've got. Now, I think Bethan was stood behind me, or someone with the family was stood behind me when I was doing it, saying, go on, do it. Was it you, or was it maybe Anna? Maybe Anna saying, well, go on, Dad, do it. I didn't want to do it. I don't want to see how much longer I've got to go. But, you know, we don't have to go around the streets of Sheffield with a camera asking people, you know, how do you cope with the idea you're going to die? Or to point people to the death clock on the internet for us to be aware of our mortality. There have been a number of significant celebrity deaths recently that have done that for us. So just recently we've had, haven't we, the death of Natasha Richardson. A picture of her is going to come up on the screen. Famous from the film Parent Trap. She was the mum in Parent Trap. Well, she had a fall on the lower slopes, the beginner slopes of skiing, and had a fall which she didn't think was that significant. She bumped her head and she laughed about it. She was encouraged to see a doctor and the like. She wasn't so keen on that. She was encouraged to go to the hospital. Eventually, she did go to the hospital. And she actually left. She walked back 300 yards to the hotel again. She didn't want to stay. She thought she was okay, but within hours, she had died due to bleeding inside her brain. She's kind of thinking, well, it's such a needless death of someone who's still very young, 45. There was also the death of Samantha and David Cameron's son, Ivan. I remember that. You could almost tell that, you know, as Gordon Brown made this statement, the Prime Minister made this statement in the Houses of Parliament, you could just tell that he knew exactly how the leader of the opposition felt. Because he had been through that himself as a dad, had a child die. And he said this, the death of a child is an unbearable sorrow that no parent should ever have to endure. Our thoughts and prayers are with David, Samantha and their family today. And of course there's Jade Goody's death. And every moment of the story has just been played out in front of us all, hasn't it, on our television screens and in the newspapers. Right from the moment where she received the diagnosis from a doctor live on Indian Big Brother. And you can go on YouTube, you can see how many hits there have been of people who have just gone back and watched that again and again and again. Millions of people have watched that on YouTube. She can't tell those in the Big Brother house with her what the news is. She's just utterly broken and fighting back the tears the grief that's engulfing her. And she doesn't want her family to hear through TV. A terrible, terrible moment. And whatever we make of Jade Goody, the death of a 27-year-old mother, it is absolutely tragic, isn't it? Absolutely tragic. As a church, it was just back in the autumn, wasn't it? Andy Harvey's mate, Dave, died whilst working. You remember that, Dave? You were here, you know, that Sunday afterwards, Andy shared. And as we prayed a moment ago, you know, Shelley's father-in-law, John's dad, died earlier this week. So you know, we don't need TV cameras to remind us of these issues. They are real, very, very real indeed. So how do we deal with them? How do we deal with them as a church? How do we deal with them as Christians? How many people have seen the film Gran Torino, Clint Eastwood's movie? Just let me know if you've seen it. But not as many as I'd have thought, actually. I think it's a fantastic film. I like, personally, a good Clint Eastwood movie. In the film, he plays Walt Kowalski. He's a grumpy, tough, prejudiced old man who is dealing with the big issues of life and death. Following his wife's funeral, Father Janovich, a Roman Catholic priest, visits Kowalski, whom he calls Walt, and Walt isn't very happy being called Walt. He wants to be called Mr. Kowalski. He won't let the priest in over the doorstep at all. He keeps him at bay outside the door, and he's not interested in anything that the priest has to offer. And he says this to him: "You know nothing about life and death, because you are an overeducated 27-year-old virgin who holds the hands of superstitious old women and promises them eternity." Yeah, it's a typical Clint Eastwood line, you know. Actually, I would encourage you to see the film. It's an interesting film because, the underlying accusation is this: the Christian church lives in an unreal world, away from the pain of reality. It's an academic, naive, inexperienced, superstitious world that takes advantage of the vulnerable. That's what that line meant. If you watch the whole film, actually, there's a couple of twists in it. Normally what happens in a Clint Eastwood film, certainly in a spaghetti western, is the last you see of the padre is him scurrying out of the village as Clint Eastwood rides in to rescue the poor people who have been beaten up and done in by the horrendous baddies. And that's the last you see of the church. Scurries out, completely unable to do anything to help at all. In this latest film, actually, that ain't the way. I mean, the Roman Catholic priest comes out as a bit of a hero. The film actually ends with an incredible Christian metaphor, which I would have expected if it was a kind of a Billy Graham movie. I'd have seen it coming from 5 minutes in. Clint Eastwood movie, you don't see it coming. It's a bit of a wonderful surprise at the end. So, yeah, I've done my bit for Clint Eastwood there. The accusation is that we, as Christians, or the church, doesn't know much at all and doesn't live in the real world. That's why it's so important, I think, that we just engage with what Jesus has to say. Few experiences are more distressing than the death of a loved one. You know, love has a great power to enrich our lives. Love's power to enrich our lives is only actually matched by love's power to embitter our lives when a loved one dies. The only thing that will match that pain and that being engulfed by all those desperate emotions is when you get the news of your own mortality. Yes, we joked a little bit earlier on, James having to lie down on the couch. But that's what happens. It's serious. Serious stuff. And James, as Louis said, he's a big man, 6'4", rugby player. Just such emotions were rattling around this room when Jesus was speaking to his disciples. It is the Last Supper. The next day Jesus is going to go to his death. He's already been alluding to that. It is only a matter of time. So Jesus is facing his own mortality. He knows next day he's going to die. Dave asked us last week as he spoke, what would you do if you're going to die tomorrow? This is what Jesus was doing when he knew he was going to die tomorrow. His disciples, his friends, are engulfed with all that pre-grief, all the senses, the concerns, the worries. The atmosphere is electric if we just let our minds drift to it and our imaginations drift to what was going on. Just that tragedy was about to engulf Jesus and his friends. One of them, Judas, had already gone to betray him as Jesus shared this last meal. He and his friends glare into the face of death. They come facing death, facing mortality, and they all respond in different ways, okay? We're going to look at Jesus' friends and the way that they were reacting, and then we'll look at the way Jesus cared for them and pastored them and the way Jesus was responding to his own death. So first of all, facing death. the three friends. Peter, the relationalist. Okay, let's engage with him first. Just look back at chapter 13 and verse 36. Peter asks, Lord, where are you going? I think what's kind of like coming behind in Peter's question is just the brutal fact that death ends relationships. Okay? Death ends relationships. It's a famous poem which is often read at funerals about a loved one who's died being in the room next door. It doesn't fit with the experience. It isn't true. Death ends relationships. That's why it's so painful. Death separates friends. That's the heart of the pain. And Peter couldn't stand the thought of that at all. I think he's in denial here. And denial is not an uncommon reaction in the face of mortality. Verse 36, Jesus says to him, you can't follow me now. But Peter won't be put off. Verse 37, Lord, why can I not follow you now? He doesn't want the friendship to end. I want to go with you. And he even says, I will lay down my life for you. You see, he thinks Christianity is all about what he can do for Jesus. It's not. He's willing to die for Jesus. I mean, it's very ironic, isn't it? I'm going to go and die for you, Jesus. When Jesus is telling him, tomorrow I'm dying for you, mate. He thinks what he can do for Jesus, what Jesus said, no. It's all about what I do for you. Peter, the relationalist. Secondly, there's Thomas, who I call the materialist. Verse 5 of chapter 14, he says, Lord, we do not know where you're going, so how can we know the way? He's working with the tangible, the material, the real world. Okay, it was all rather matter of fact. A bit like some of those folks we heard on the screen earlier on. You know, when I die, that's it. You know, when it comes, it comes. It kind of all very matter of fact. The material world we live in, what we know, what we don't know. In a sense, I suppose Thomas is really asking, where is heaven? Is it, do you get in a rocket, if they'd been invented then, and do you kind of like head out into space, past Mars, take the third street on your right, and you'll see it right there on your left. Big, you know, big gates, can't miss it, head in there. You know, that's the realm that he's working in. I don't know where it is. How do we know the way? And he wants the map. He wants the A to Z of the universe. Or one of them things that we have in our cars that lead us over cliff edges and through canals. What do we call that? I don't know. That's what he's asking for, isn't it? I think he's interested, but I think he sees it as futile. If Peter's in denial, Thomas is fatalistic. Okay, I think that's where these two guys are. And then thirdly, there's Philip, who I call the spiritualist. He works in a different sort of realm. If Peter's response to death arises out of the emotional dimension, Thomas's arises out of the physical dimension. Philip's response is the spiritual dimension. Okay? I don't know, would Philip have been the kind of person who'd have gone to see a medium like that lady we heard about on the film a while back? And we stood there, Chris and Jim and myself, were two widows. She was with another lady outside John Lewis. Both of them had lost their husbands. And we just stood there talking about their bereavement, their grief. But one of them said, she'd been to see a medium and her husband had come through to her. Would Philip have been the kind of guy to have gone to hear what it's like from the other side? I think he would have been tempted. See, but instead of going to hearing from a dead loved one, he goes for the number one, biggest one-to-one you could ever imagine. He says to Jesus, doesn't he, show us the Father, doesn't he? Look what he says there, which is the verse that he says that in verse 8. He says, show us the Father. Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us. Well, of course it will be enough, isn't it? Well, it's an interaction with God himself on the matter. For some comfort and for some hope. So Peter, Thomas and Philip's reaction to death. I can relate to these guys, can't you? You know, you might be able to relate to one of them in particular. It may well be a bit like me and you can relate to a little bit of all of them. I think I can relate to a little bit of all of them, actually. And I'm kind of glad that they're there asking their questions and being a little bit dumb, because they're asking the questions that my heart asks. Jesus replies. Jesus has a specific thing to say to each of them individually, but what I want to do is just focus in on the conversation that he has with Thomas, chapter 14, verses 1 to 7, because that actually helps us see what's going on with his comments to Philip and his comments to Peter as well. They all relate to one another. So the second main thing I want to draw our minds to is life in the face of death. So let's look to Jesus' reaction and the way that he pastors his friends and what he says to them. And the very first thing that Jesus required of his friends is this. He says, trust in me. See that in verse 1? Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. Believe in me, says Jesus. The first thing he calls us to do is to trust him. Trust in Jesus. Trust in Jesus. Jesus' friends were about to abandon him, weren't they? They were about to flee off into the night. They were about to fail him as he was arrested. And Peter has these great intentions, doesn't he? He says, Jesus, I'll go and die for you. Well, that's all very fine, isn't it? When you're in a nice, warm, cozy upper room, you know, lounging around on cushions. And yes, Jesus is talking about death here. And yes, it is frightening. But the context means that he's able to be a bit brave, isn't he? He's had a big meal and he's had a couple of glasses of wine. Few hours later, it's dark, it's cold, he's not had much sleep, and he's surrounded by a hostile crowd. Where's his bravery then? It's out. It's nowhere to be seen. A young girl comes to him and says, you're one of Jesus' friends. No, not me. Peter do anything for Jesus? No. So Jesus says to him, Peter, you must trust what I can do for you. What you can do, you can't do anything for me. You'll fail. And that's what we need. All of us need to be hearing Jesus say to us tonight. You fail. You will fail me. You can't live up to my standards. You must trust me. If you're going to be right with God, trust me. Don't trust yourself. Have confidence in what I can do for you, says the Lord Jesus Christ. But what are we to trust him for? Well, verse 2 says, in heaven there is room enough for everyone, says Jesus. In my Father's house there are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? No, it wouldn't have done. In heaven there's room enough for everyone. And don't worry, says Jesus, I'm going to prepare the place for you. It's my Father's house. So I mean, that straight away, it's not about what we do. You don't have to pass an entrance exam to get into heaven. It's not a place for heroes only. It's not a place for martyrs only. No, heaven is my Father's house. Trust me for this, says Jesus. Heaven is home. It is somewhere where you belong. In my Father's house, there are many rooms. If there weren't, I would have told you. Trust me, heaven is home, secondly. Don't despair, says Jesus, in the face of death. Jesus is saying in the face of my own death, his own death. He says to Peter, look back at 12:37, he says, one day you will follow me, you will die. So he's actually saying to Peter, trust me when it comes to your own death. Trust me when it comes to your loved one's death. You will fear. You will be engulfed in disappointment, bewilderment. There will be tears of failure. There will be the darkness of bereavement. But through it all, trust in me. I'm going to confirm your place in heaven. Verse 3, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. So the second thing to trust Jesus for is heaven is ready. Heaven is a home, but heaven is ready. Jesus, of course, is referring here to his own death and to his own resurrection. He will rise, he'll ascend back to heaven, and then he will come back and will take those who trust him to be with him in heaven. But the process, how he prepares and make sure there's a place in heaven for those who trust him, is through his own death. Let me explain. Let me explain it by just giving you a couple of illustrations. Death, if you've not confronted it already, will deepen your awareness of failure. Okay, it'll make you aware of a lot of things, but it will make you aware of what the Bible calls sin. You might not call it that, but it's what the Bible calls it. It will motivate you to put the wrongs you know are wrong right, if you have the time. Let me illustrate. So in the news the other day, there was an American man called James Brewer. I don't know if any of you heard about James Brewer. Following a very serious stroke, he found himself on what he thought was his deathbed, and he summoned a local policeman in order to quote him, cleanse his soul. All right? And what did that mean? Well, that meant admitting to murdering Jimmy Carroll in 1977, for which he was never... he was never found guilty, and Brewer made, unfortunately, in one sense for himself, a full recovery. Now, he's now going through the courts, and it's likely that he will face the death penalty. Isn't that ironic? So it's just what death did for him, though. Cleanse my soul. Put wrongs right. One of the most desperate situations I found myself in was spending time with a family. Don't get me wrong, I feel quite emotional. As I wrote this out the other day, Tanya walked in and I was actually in tears. It was a very emotional moment, and I'll be honest, I've seen myself a couple of times in this situation as Louise and James and me and Tanya, and we've known them. All right, I've gone back to this situation. It was a family. The mum suffered a massive heart failure. And her husband and mother and two children and I gathered around the hospital bed to pray before the doctors switched off the life support. And then the daughter stayed on with her dad and grandma as mum slipped away. And then at that point, they stayed. I drove the son, who was about 7 years old, to a friend's home, about 7 miles away, on a barge. Just drove from Oxford back down the road. Those were desperately significant moments in my life. What do you say? The little lad. Much of the time in the weeks that followed was spent counselling that little lad's dad over his desperate sense of guilt. His failure as a dad, his failure as a husband. Sure, there was false guilt. There was, which I had to counsel him against. But there was also real guilt too. If you've been bereaved, you know what I'm talking about. For this chap, there was nothing he could do to put it right. His wife had died. He was angry with himself. And you know what? He knew God was right to be angry with him too. That's what the Bible calls sin. And God is rightly angry with us because of our sin. The things we failed to do, that we should have done, the things we've done that we shouldn't have done. Well, when Jesus died on the cross, and he says he's going to prepare a place, prepare a way for us, he's referring to his death upon the cross. As he died on the cross, he took the punishment, God's justifiable anger, that we deserve for our sin, our guilt and failure on himself. That's how Jesus prepared a place in heaven for you and for me, for those of us who trust him. In the face of Jesus' death, our own death, our mortality, Jesus says to us, trust me, I took the punishment that you deserve. You no longer face God's anger. Heaven is ready. Your place is secure. That's what he's saying here. Your place is secure. I prepare a place for you, and after I've gone, I will come back and take you to be with me so that where I am, you may be too. But where is this heaven? Where is this heaven? What is it? That's Thomas's question, isn't it, in verse 5. You know, Lord, we don't know where you're going. How do we know the way? And it leads to the third thing that Jesus asks us to trust. It's this. I've kind of slightly overstated it, but I think I can justifiably overstate it. Heaven is Jesus. Trust Jesus that heaven is in him. He actually says so that where I am, you may be too. It's all bound up with Jesus' person, himself. Jesus says to Thomas, I know you find it hard, this is verse 6, I know you find it hard to think of heaven as a place, so think of it as me, says Jesus, as a friendship with me that begins now. Jesus said to him, I am the way, the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I am the way. Trust me. It's me. Rely upon me. Jesus is saying that we should take him very seriously here, isn't he? If he's the way, there is no other way. Either he's right or he's wrong. He insists that we take him very seriously. Sometimes we can be tempted to think there are so many religions in the world that, you know, we can be evasive. You know, there are so many religions. How does God expect me, I'm only little me, to choose the right one? But Jesus won't allow us to be evasive. He says, I am the way, the truth and the life. That's the positive. And then he puts it negative. Unless we were to make it really clear, no one comes to the Father except through me. He puts it positively and negatively. We can't get out of it. He was either lying or he was telling the truth. We can't avoid it. Only one religious leader will be praised and worshipped in heaven, and that's Jesus. C.S. Lewis wrote in a book called God in the Dock about this uniqueness of Jesus. He said this, if you'd gone to Buddha and asked him, are you the son of Brahma? He would have said, my son, you are still in the veil of illusion. If you'd gone to Socrates and asked, are you Zeus? He would have laughed at you. If you'd gone to Muhammad and asked, are you Allah? He'd have rent his clothes. Thomas says to Jesus, Philip says to Jesus, show us the Father. And what does Jesus say? You're out of your mind? I rent my clothes? You're in the veil of illusion? No. Look what he says in verse 7 and then verse 9. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you do know me and have seen me. Verse 9, Jesus said to Philip, have I been with you so long and you still do not know me, Philip? Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? That's staggering, isn't it? Now, we define heaven ultimately as heaven is where God is. Jesus says, that's the Father, that's me. It's all about me. So let me just draw some conclusions here. In the face of mortality, in the face of death, Jesus doesn't offer us answers to all our questions, and we have lots of them. But he offers us something much better. He actually offers us himself. He offers us himself. And the only way a person, any person, can be apprehended is through trust and through love. All relationships are a gamble. And in the light and the face of mortality and death, Jesus says, I am the only one worth gambling on. Gamble on me. Trust me. Trust me for your life. Trust me for your death. Trust me for your death. And as you die, trust me knowing there is a very safe pair of hands ready to catch you on the other side. You want to see the Father? See me. You want to know the God? Know me. You want to know about life beyond death? Know me now, says Jesus. Trust me. Jesus calls us to gamble on him. I was very struck at a funeral a couple of years ago, and it was actually Alex Cooper's grandma's funeral. Philip Hacking was speaking at it, and he was speaking from this very passage. And he said of Alex's grandma, He said, Irene knew where she was going, and she knew how she was going to get there, because she trusted Jesus. Jesus knew where he was going and knew how he was going to get there. And the question is for each and every one of us tonight, do you know where you're going, and do you know how you're going to get there? It may well be that as I've been speaking, as we've been thinking about Jesus tonight, it's all been very new to you, and you kind of think, well, I've not heard this before. It may be a chance for you to... That's what I'm looking for, Chris. Thanks very much indeed. Always good to have folks around looking after you, isn't it? Keep coming on Sundays, particularly over these next few weeks. We switch from thinking about a purpose for life to thinking about a purpose for death. And on these little leaflets you'll find over there is details about our events, over our services over Christmas, over Easter, where we think about Jesus. Christmas already? We think about Jesus' death, okay? Some stuff. Next Sunday, Palm Sunday, the week before Easter, Good Friday, Easter Sunday, and the week following. Or pick one of those up and invite your friends to come along and carry on thinking about the one who makes life beyond death possible and actually a reality. The other thing you might want to do is to pick up one of these little leaflets, Life with a Purpose. It advertises a 6-week course that we run, Christianity Explored. You don't need to know anything about the Bible, that's what it says on here. You won't be asked to read out loud, pray or sing. You can ask any question you want. Louise, who shared with us earlier on, is one of our main leaders on that. And Duncan and Katie Rugvey, who led us in prayers earlier on, are also some of the other significant leaders on that too. So they're here. Want to find out more? Ask them. Pick up the leaflet, contact them during the week. Don't go away from here doing nothing though. So if it's all new to you, pick up those two things and follow through on that. It may well be, though, that you're sat here tonight. You might have been to church before, you might have been to this church before. And tonight you do have just that sense of awareness that you have heard, through the Bible, Jesus speaking to you, saying to you, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Saying to you, to your heart, to your mind, trust me. And it may well be because you're just aware that, yeah, you need to think about mortality, because that's a wise thing to do. But it may well be because you're actually going through circumstances at the moment that's doing that for you. And tonight you know you need to do business with God. Well, if that's you, then please do come and see me at the end and let me chat with you and let me help and assist you do business with God. Or maybe talk to the person you come with tonight.